Hello, I'm Adrian Wagner. Welcome to Delta Affairs Weekly. Lisa Krebs, DEC, Bob Whittier, EPA, and a representative of the Coast Guard visited Bethel this week to lead a series of trainings geared towards improving spill response capabilities of Delta communities. We spoke about the trainings and the issues that brought them about. We begin with Mr. Whittier of the EPA.
Well, I think the main thing here is, you know, Bethel's quite a distance away, and there really isn't any truly environmental governmental entity down here. I mean, I don't know if Lisa can chime in, but we lost a state responder to retirement last year, so there's kind of a hole. And what we like to do is trying to, you know, train the local folks, you know, if they had the original, what's called the 40-hour HAZWOPR training, you know, for responding to oil spills and hazardous material spills, they can actually get a refresher on it. You know, it's, there are eyes and ears essentially down here if something big was to go wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm. What is the scope of this training?
You know, it's mostly safety issues associated with it, you know, making sure they have the right personal protective equipment and whatnot, and so they do it right and they can do it in a safe manner.
Okay, so are you guys providing them with new equipment also?
Not necessarily. There's a few avenues that where they can actually acquire equipment, but, you know, not directly from, you know, governmental entities. You know, I'm not sure if there's any funding sources out there. That's something we'd have to research for them.
As you guys know, in this area, Donlin Gold is a big interest and concern for many people, and it's been brought to the attention of the city manager that Bethel itself may not have the proper emergency response capabilities for not only a potential oil spill, but just chemical spill in general. Are you preparing cities for something like that?
Well, I am aware of Donlin Gold. I read their draft EIS. I read Ann Capella's comments mm-hmm. on the EIS. And one of the reasons I'm here, I'm actually going to meet with Ann. I met with the harbor master, and I'm hoping to meet with the fire chief, is to plug for the local emergency response committees. Bethel doesn't have one. There's grants and funding through the State Emergency Planning Commission to establish local emergency response committees. And the Donlin Gold, you know, to have one of those is an avenue to, you know, figure out what might be needed when, you know, Donlin starts staging out of Bethel.
Are you hoping or working with Bethel to get something in place before a Donlin Gold comes out here, or are you working with them in the event that it does?
Well, every community should have a local emergency response committee, whether there's a Donlin Gold or not. I would encourage every community to have one, you know, but it will help with when Donlin Gold comes out, because, you know, there will be a plan in place, and it's a forum to address a lot of the concerns that people have with Donlin Gold.
Last time we spoke, we were talking about an oil spill of some sort in Tintituliak, and it seems to me that the issue when last we spoke was that the tribal council was not reporting that they were seeing oil out there. Is that a problem that you see in a lot of communities, that the council itself, the governing body in these places, doesn't know how to interact with your entity?
Well, I don't see that as an overreaching problem. I think some improvements could be made from everybody, you know, just, and that's one of the reasons why we're having this class, is that we can tell people, you know, this is who you need to call, this is why you need to call. So we're hoping to get that message out there with this class.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to the kind of Coast Guard side of things, recently out on, relatively near Nunavak Island, there, the Champion Ebony ran aground briefly. Luckily, nothing happened. Now, folks out there in Macoryuk just realized that they do not really have emergency response capabilities themselves, and their concern also is that Coast Guard might not get there in time to solve that issue for them. I mean, what are you guys doing for these coastal communities that are dealing with these oil tankers frequently?
One of the difficulties we have is receiving accurate and timely notifications. If we get the notification in a timely manner and with accurate facts, we can take appropriate steps to ensure we not only monitor, but we to make sure we have enough personnel and staff and equipment to respond.
This tanker had 14.2 million gallons of oil inside of it. I mean, is there a scenario in which Mykolaiv, even with the proper emergency response training, could possibly deal with 14.2 million gallons of oil being spilled into its waters? Or is this really a question of sort of regulation?
It's a question of regulation. Coast Guard, they have regulations, response plans. DEC also has response plans for tankers that operate within 3 miles. The Champion Ebony, which you're talking about, was operating outside of that, and there are a number of tankers that operate just outside of the state waters. I can tell you that me personally and DEC, we keep an eye on the tanker traffic, so we are always aware of who's out there, whether they're in the state zone or not. All of the ones that are operating outside, they still have plans. They're just through the Coast Guard. I mean, 14 million gallons, I don't think that a community could deal with that on their own, but they wouldn't have to. It would be the initial hours of a spill like that until DEC and Coast Guard responders could get out there, and we would get out there. And these tankers, their plans call for them to actually have a pre-contracted responder that would be, and they would be activated immediately if there was a situation. So there would be some lag time just because it's, you know, remote, but there would be people on the scene.
So yeah, I'm just wondering about accountability in this situation. If we're talking about the Champion Ebony specifically, it's owned by just a huge range of people, just this consortium. Who in those situations do you look to when it's not owned by a particular company, but owned by many, many companies and many individuals?
There always is a responsible party, and sometimes a company owns another company, and that company has an affiliate of another company. Regardless, if there's a discharge, we take quick action. They'll have a vessel response plan, and if they don't have a vessel response plan, appropriate response resources will be launched to mitigate the pollution threat or potential pollution threat. Mm-hmm. Now, we're not attorneys; we're response professionals. So our job is to make sure response resources are engaged and deployed. And typically the responsible party, in most cases, takes appropriate action. However, as regulatory authorities, if we deem that does not happen, we have the capability of utilizing a federal fund to ensure that the resources to mitigate the pollution threat are deployed.
Sure.
And then we let the attorneys and lawyers figure out who's responsible at the end for cost recovery.
Yeah, and it works the same way with the EPA. We tap from that same funding source. Mm-hmm. But we always let the responsible party, the facility owner, put their best foot forward and we'll see how they do. And, you know, most times they do, you know, respond accordingly. But there's always that outside chance that, you know, if they're not cleaning things up accordingly or if they run out of a funding source, we can always step in and take over, so to speak.
Sometimes we do come in. There are situations where we don't have a responsible party or it's undetermined or everybody's pointing the finger at each other. Oh, you're responsible. I'm responsible. And that's where we get involved and we make sure resources are launched.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to bring up too, as far as industry is concerned, I mean, we're always out there doing training and exercises with them, you know, so we know. So if the bell goes off in an actual event, we know who's who. And it's kind of a plug and play type system. It's called the incident command system. And, you know, most people are fairly familiar with it.
A lot of times when accidents occur, they do occur because of bad weather. And that same thing that caused the accident may also prevent you all from interacting. How are you guys addressing that?
I don't think it prevents us from interacting, but it does complicate, you know, and extend an initial response time. Everything out here is far more expensive than anything that we would have to do on the road system. So, you know, that's not going to change. That's something that we deal with on a daily basis. You know, that's why, like we're saying, it's really important to develop relationships in the community and to get people involved in their own community because, really, they have the highest stake and, you know, they're the first ones on the ground. And, you know, so.
And that's one of the reasons why we're here.
We're here,
yeah.
Exactly.
To build those relationships so they know who to contact and they know what information we'll be looking for because, granted, we're in Anchorage. The weather may be really nasty. It may take us a day, depending on weather, to actually arrive in Bethel. It may take a few days for resources, depending on the time of year and the weather that we're facing, things that are completely outside of our control.
Yeah, local knowledge is very important to us. You know, another aspect here is we have ongoing governmental plans. We have combined plans, both the Coast Guard, State, and EPA, and that's an ongoing effort. We have 10 sub-areas in the state of Alaska, and each and every one gets reviewed every 5 years. Mm-hmm. And we're always seeking input from the local community and as to, you know, how we develop those plans. And we want them to make comment because they're the ones local. They have the local knowledge.
That's it for this week's Delta Affairs Weekly. I'm Adrian Wagner. Thanks for listening.